everyone. Welcome to the Tree Spirit Telesummit. I'm your host, Kim Wilborn, founder of GuardianGateway.com, where we help you connect with the high vibrational guardians and allies, angels, fairies, dragon and unicorn energies, trees, of course, plant spirits, and more, who are here to help uplift every area of life. And I want to thank you so much for being here with us as we come into sacred relationship with the trees. Together with you, we're creating a beautiful sacred space where humans and trees can come together in powerful new ways to support each other and our world. Now, you'll find a free 48-hour replay for every call on our schedule and replay page, and I've created two affordable upgrade packages with recordings to help you get lasting benefits from the Telesummit, and they're both at a discount price right now. Our Sacred Relationship package gives you all the interview recordings from the Telesummit, as well as the Tree Spirit Telesummit Journal and Guide ebook with an all-new design, and all the meditations from the call set to music to make it easy for you to experience the guided journeys again and again. You'll also receive the Awareness of Your Heart Field, Be the Tree, and Put Yourself in the Tree's Place guided meditations from Basha Alexander. Tree Love, Conversations with Sentient Trees by Elisa Novick. Tree Whispers and Instructional PDFs from Jim Conroy. The Spiritual Life of Trees book list from Michael Polarski. Journey Through the Fairy Door guided meditation from Karen Kay. And Exercises to Detect the Magic of a Forest by Jackie Queeley. And this time we also have a brand new second option. Option 2 gives you everything in Option 1. All the Telesummit call recordings and bonuses, plus you'll get my daily support and centering package. I've taken 6 special themes from my daily gateway program and created a special 6-week program of daily audio messages for you. Every morning, you'll receive a new 3 to 5 minute audio message to support you in getting centered and grounded before heading into the day and connecting you to your true self and the power of your own beautiful heart. Our weekly themes are Make Friends with the Trees, Partner with Chakra Guardians, Connect to the Spirit of Water, Connect to the Spirit of Air, Connect to the Spirit of Fire, and Connect to the Spirit of Earth. As always, you'll find both options on our schedule and replay page. Today, I'm looking forward to speaking with Michael Dunning, but before we begin, I'd like to invite you to take a deep breath and fully enter into the sacred space that we are creating here together. If you're in a safe place to do so, I'd like to invite you to close your eyes and begin to relax. Allow yourself to feel a beautiful beam of source energy entering through the top of your head. As this source energy flows down into your body, feel it cleansing, clearing, and balancing every part of your body and every part of your being. Feel it filling your entire body, flowing through your feet, and beaming down into the center of the earth. At the center of the earth, feel the presence of a huge glowing crystal filled with positive energy and love for you. Sit see the beam of source energy flow down into the crystal? Harmonize with the energy there and beam straight back up into you. Feel this beautiful energy flow up in a gentle wave. A wave that fills you, surrounds you, and then spreads out to bless the entire world. See the whole planet held in a space of safety and love. Now feel yourself entering a sacred grove, filled with trees that have come forward to hold this sacred space with us. Feel yourself become centered. Feel yourself become grounded. Feel yourself become balanced. And feel yourself become whole. Come back to your own heart and connect with love to the trees that are physically near you at this moment. Feel their steady, supportive presence all around you, and feel your own energetic roots connecting you to their roots. Set an intention to create a beautiful relationship with the spirits of the trees around you, wherever you go. Now shine your love to all the trees across the planet. Feel their love in return and become part of a beautiful, interconnected pattern of love and support. Now feel your own beautiful energy once again. Come back to your own heart and thank the trees who have come forth to bring their energy to this event. Feel yourself in vibrant, powerful partnership with all the trees and take your place in the creative tapestry of life that we are weaving together. Now take another nice deep breath. Open your eyes and look around the room. Feel yourself fully in your body. Come all the way back to your normal waking state and join with me in welcoming our speaker. During the late 1980s, Michael Dunning became extremely ill. Several years later, close to death, he was led to an ancient yew tree in the south of Scotland. Michael spent over 9 years with this yew tree, where he was healed and given the template for a spiritual teaching and shamanic healing practice that he refers to collectively as the yew mysteries. Michael immigrated to the U.S. in 2003 and currently teaches the yew mysteries in the U.S., Canada, and the U.K. Welcome to the Tree Spirit Telesummit, Michael.
Thanks, Kim. It's a delight to be here, and it's lovely to be in your presence again.
Oh, it's wonderful to have you. I'm so glad you could be part of this.
Well, thank you for inviting me. It's an honor.
Oh, I know everyone is so excited to hear what you have to say. You are part of our Fairy Allies Telesummit, and everyone really loved your call. Where do we begin today?
Well, quite dramatically, I think I thought I would just start with, because the U is such a mysterious being, that I thought I would start right with the, right in the depth, and really to say that to be in the presence of a, of an ancient yew tree is to, really is to encounter an incarnated eternity on the earth. What we might call, in this case, an Elohim being, who has really entered the life of the earth and who can teach us about the other world and really about the sacred within of the earth as a living wholeness. So it's quite a dramatic thing to say.
It is.
Yes, the you as an incarnated eternity and as an Elohim. And as a being who holds a sacred within of this other world as a living wholeness. And you could say that the you is really the custodian of the incarnated forces of the other world. Now, that's a big sentence, the incarnated forces of the other world. And these are the forces of origin that can bring profound regeneration, healing, transformation, and that really ultimately that can hold the seed of a renewed consciousness, certainly in co-creative partnership with the yews and the beings associated with the yew trees. And during my time under the yew, which was quite a long time, as you said in your introduction, we can literally see these forces that I've been talking about at work in the actual living gestures of the ancient yew trees themselves. There's tremendous gestures of an inside, this great hollowing that the yews can achieve, where there'll be a trunk that will gradually become hollow over a period of time. And this might be a period of hundreds and hundreds of years, if not longer. And right in the cambium layer, in the arched ceiling of this inner hollow of this tree, a tiny shoot will appear and begin to grow down from the ceiling, from the cambium of the ceiling. And it might take hundreds upon hundreds of years to grow back down and to take root in the earth again. And I might talk a little bit later about a yew I spent time with in Wales that showed that gesture. But what the yew really is, in this kind of gesture of hollowing, and it's also this other layer, gesture it has of what's that's called branch layering, of creating these great internal chamber-like caverns that you can walk in. You can actually, in a sense, be inside of the yew trees. But what it really shows us is that there's a gesture of a literal turning away from the sun, as we understand that, or turning away from the solar world that we really associate with plants. And yet here's this being, this tree, this incredible being, literally seeming to turn away from the sun, the very source of life that we often talk about. And there's a great truth and a great depth there in why the yew does that. It also shows these great gestures of resurrection, you could say regeneration, where yews that seem to have died, they look, to all intents and purposes, completely dead. They can literally rise from the dead. You can also have felled yews that are completely horizontal that will begin to, over a period of time, shoot growth out, and you'll have this another yew forest growing out from a felled tree.
Wow.
They're extraordinary. And the gestures of longevity, thousands and thousands and thousands of years old these trees can be. And I stand in a very controversial position with this, because there's quite a lot of attempt to have the yew taken more seriously scientifically. And while I applaud that, what's actually happening is that the ages of the yews are being downgraded to sort of try and bring it in line with sort of scientific estimates. And the reality is that nobody can actually date the age of a ewe. It's impossible to do it unless planting dates are actually known. And some of these trees, because you can't ring count them, they become hollow. They rot. They go through this process of rot. There aren't really any rings to count in some of these, most of these ancient ewes. And radiocarbon datings have been really, really off in their estimates. So it's very difficult to know how old these trees are. So we're literally looking at beings that could be thousands upon thousands of years old, and probably the oldest living beings on the planet. And controversially, I'll say, given from the ewe itself, through the vistas it showed me of other worlds preceding ours, in a sense, and Earth that preceded ours, was really we're looking at an antediluvian being, something that was so ancient. It was essentially kind of Atlantean and pre-Atlantean. And that's a very dramatic thing to say, but I'm just basically going from the sort of visions and the depth of vision that I was given under the tree. One of the other amazing gestures is that they stand outside the polarities of sex. You cannot say that a ewe is either male or female. They stand outside of those kinds of polarities. So standing outside of the polarities of sex, in a way, really says that they stand outside the realm of what we understand as death. Because really the whole notion of sexual reproduction and birth and things like that are linked to death. And the ewe seems to step aside, it seems to sidestep not only the polarities of sex, but also this whole question of death. Because left to their own devices, these beings would just remain on the earth as long as the earth existed. There's also something very extraordinary that I was very affected by, and it's taken me many, many years to understand this, was the production of alkaloid toxins from the bark and from the needles as well as from the roots, according to some studies, that can directly affect your consciousness, obviously. I mean, so when you're inside of this chamber, and for anybody who's seen the ewe, and you can certainly look at my website and see these pictures of this enclosed chamber, that once you're inside of that chamber, one way in and one way out, you're actually subjected to the what I call the thinking of the you. It's almost like you walk into this mind of the you, which is like a mist. I call it the alkaloid mist or the alkaloid cloud. And you're actually walking into the space of breathing where the you is giving off this alkaloid toxin out to the air in the space around its trunk and held within its chamber. So you actually have, your consciousness will be changed in next to a you. So there's extraordinary process that I talk about involved with the alkaloid mist or the alkaloid cloud. And that was a very big part of the time I spent under the tree, was feeling that I was entering into this thinking of the you and my thinking being changed and broadened and deepened. It's very different from other psychoactive plants from that point of view, and which we would ingest. You know, most psychoactive plants you actually ingest. The ewe ingests us, which is really quite extraordinary. It's everything about the ewe, in a sense, is reversed or inverted. So, you know, rather than us taking the ewe inside ourselves, in which in actual fact to do so would kill us, and every part of the ewe, other than the aril, spelled A-R-I-L, which is the berry, will kill a human being. The only part you can eat is the fleshy aril, which is the berry of the female yew tree, the female expressed yew tree, should I say. And eating that is very, very nutritious, and the seed of that is deadly poison. So this tree, that to ingest it is to die. So you have to, in a sense, be ingested by it. So everything about the tree is really reversed, and it has caused tremendous confusion in botanists over the years in terms of how to categorize it. Do they even categorize it as a tree? It was at one time its definition as a conifer was being challenged because it was really not a conifer. It doesn't have cones. It has it has these arrows on the female expressed use. So they were confused about what to call it. It was only when the definition of conifer got extended that the yew was able to retain its place as a conifer. So it's a really paradoxical tree. And I should just say there, in case anybody's slightly confused, when I say that the yew stands above sex, what I mean is that a yew can express either depending on circumstances. So a yew can look predominantly male, it could be predominantly expressing male, but it might suddenly produce a whole female section in its, or it can completely change sex. And this has been known to happen in one less than a single year in some studies. So we're talking about a plasticity, an ability to change and make changes, a morphology, a gesture of change and regeneration and shifting that is really profound and very, very otherworldly. Hmm. And anybody who encounters a yew, they really feel the otherworldliness of it. It seems to come from another place, another world. It doesn't seem to submit to the laws of the world that we live in today. It doesn't really seem to have a strong relationship to the sun. Of course it does, and it's adapted, but as we'll see hopefully in a little bit later on, as I've talked about before, the original relationship of the yew was to another sun. It wasn't to the solar orb that we see in the sky today. And therein lies a very, very big tale. But I'll save that for a little bit later on. So the yew is a living paradox at every level. It's a living mystery. And it takes us to the individual human. I mean, for us to be able to come into a relationship with a yew, to be able to incarnate and learn from the yew and incarnate these forces as healing and transformation, we really first have to establish a co-creative partnership with the yew, and then with the beings associated with the yew that I refer to as the shining ones. We can also talk about them as the she. And these shining ones and the she and the Tua De Danann of Ireland were actually all given yew names, as I'll say shortly. So such a partnership with a tree like the yew takes a lot of time. And this is the work that we seek to do with what I'm calling the yew mysteries. We really are talking about building new organs of perception that can actually function within the world of a yew, rather than thinking that we can take what we have, how we're constituted as a human being, and simply sort of project that towards a tree. It doesn't really work with the yew. I mean, there might be some sense of connection there, but really, the yew doesn't really hear a human being as constituted today. We really have to extend and change and develop these new organs of perception. And a lot of that comes from the time I spent under the yew was actually watching my own healing and seeing my own healing follow certain parameters that were tantamount to building a new body, new sensory surfaces with which to communicate with the tree and its beings. So over the last 20 years, this is the work that I've been doing with the yew mysteries, is to try and help work with others to help them birth these organs of perception that can learn to touch and be touched by the eternity of a yew tree. So I made a very big claim, and I said that I called the yew an Elohim being. And I'm taking that word from that tradition for a specific reason. There's other ways I could have described this, but the word Elohim opens us up into really an understanding, a deeper understanding of what the yew is. So I said in my description that people will have read, is that the yew is known as the overseer of the light, and as an Elohim. Now, this isn't me making that up. This is actually out there. This is actually has been expressed. by the Gnostics. And I'd like to talk a little bit about that and perhaps tell a little story about where and how that came to be, because it sheds a lot of light onto this overseer of the light, if you like. So this story is a really interesting story, and it begins with a man by the name of James Bruce of Kinnaird. He was an 18th century Scottish nobleman. I like it because it's obviously about a Scottish nobleman, but makes it very grand. And he was actually a descendant of King Robert the Bruce. And anybody who's seen Braveheart will know he wasn't portrayed very favourably, actually, in that film. It wasn't very accurate. But so Robert the Bruce famously defeated the English at the Battle of Bannockburn in 1314. So James Bruce, the 18th century nobleman, he was something of an explorer. And in about 1786, he set off for Abyssinia, which we know today as Ethiopia. And he went off in search of the source of the Blue Nile River, apparently. That was apparently what he was off to search for, the source of the Blue Nile. But this isn't really what he was looking for, because Bruce was a Freemason, and he was a member of what was called the Kilwinning Number 2 Lodge in Edinburgh. And that's one of the oldest lodges in Scotland. And it involves a lot of the mystical teachings in the Judeo-Christian tradition of myth and ritual. And this is quite a deep story, because Freemasonry in Scotland is said to have been founded on the rites of the Knights Templar by none other than Robert the Bruce himself, the king who defeated the English back in 1314, the very ancestor of James Bruce himself. So King Robert the Bruce was known to have a deep connections with the Knights Templar, and who he had actually aided, and who in turn actually helped the Scots defeat the English at that battle of Bannockburn in 1314. But what's really interesting for us, and we can bring all this back to the U, it's said that every Scot, every person who went into that battle that day, wore a sprig of yew in their plaid, in their tartan plaid. And the yew is sacred to the Knights Templar. And this is a bigger story for another time. And it was sacred to King Robert the Bruce himself, whose own ancestors had been gifted yew lands called Castle Eden Dean. And that Eden Dean comes from the Saxon Jordan, which means yew dean. And that's where the word Eden, it's actually where the word Eden comes from, the Saxon word Jordan. It means Eden, and that's where we get Eden from. And it's a 10,000-year-old, undisturbed woodland in County Durham in England. 10,000 years of undisturbed woodland. This was given, it's full of these really old yews, given to the Bruce's family. So the yew was held as sacred within these noble families. And this is a big key part of the story. And it's something about the yew that can't really be sidestepped, because it really brings it into focus. So James Bruce, our intrepid explorer, looking for the source of this river, he would have known about the sacredness of the yew. He never talks about it. And you see this time and time again. It's almost as though it's forbidden to mention this tree. The Knights Templar too, forbidden. And so he would have understood the sacredness of it. And he would have also understood that in the Scottish Masonic tradition, the craft was founded by the antediluvian patriarch known as Enoch, who was regarded as Noah's great-grandfather. Now, Enoch was said to have brought knowledge of writing and significantly of building, which would make sense with the Masonic connection. And the name Enoch means initiate, or one who has been initiated. And Enoch is really Thoth, the Egyptian god of wisdom. It's the same being. And this Enoch, as we know, was taken by the angels. He was taken by the watchers, the shining ones, and said to have been the first mortal to have entered the Garden of Eden. And we know this word comes from the yew. Since this, he was taken to Eden, since the first person, since the so-called expulsion of Adam and Eve, when we want to think about it in that particular tradition anyway. And when he was taken to Eden, the divine beings dictated books to Enoch. And these books were dictated to him from the tree of knowledge and from the tree of life in Eden. So these books are called the books of Enoch. And you're probably aware of these books, and many of your listeners will be aware of these books. The books of Enoch had been known about since ancient times, but it was thought that they had been lost, irretrievably lost. So Bruce wasn't looking for the source of the Blue Nile River. He was looking for the lost books of Enoch. That's why he'd gone to Ethiopia, because that's where they were thought to be. And to cut a long story short, because Bruce wrote a lot, he brought not just one, but three copies back to the Western world, back to Europe. Amazing. Not just one copy, but three. And these books are fascinating, but what I want to talk about here a little bit are other books that are not talked about, because he also found other books. And these other books are the books that point to the yew tree as Elohim, incarnated on earth. And these books have been translated as the books of yew. It's quite hard to take this in, but these are existent books. These are called the books of yew, and they came from Coptic, Arabic, and Ethiopic manuscripts that Bruce bought in Upper Egypt around about 1769 or thereabouts. And since about, these books have been known to scholars since about 1892, so they've been available to scholars since 1892. It's not like the Gnostic Gospels that were found much later. These have been known for quite a while. They're not necessarily, you know, found in, you know, not that recent. So again, Bruce would have known about the significance of the yew, and that these books of yew were extremely important to him, and probably to this whole Freemasonic piece. And these books might even have been as important, if not more important, than the books of Enoch. So what do the books actually tell us? And this is where we get into this Elohim nature of this yew tree. And I think it's important to talk about this, because it really sets, we really then have to know what we're dealing with when we're going to encounter a yew tree. Very little has been said about these books, and I might be the first person to be really talking about them in relationship to the yew. I probably am. I haven't been able to find anybody else who talks about this or has ever talked about it. So, you know, the truth of it really is that the yew has been quietly controlled by the church. Most of the yews that we have, the ancient yews, are in churchyards, managed by the church. The great boughs of the yew are cut back in order supposedly to prevent the branches from growing into the ground, which the yew will do, and then going into the mouths of the corpses, they would say. This is a sacrilege. But actually, there's much more there to this that actually ties in with deeper mythology that I'd love to talk more about at some point. But the yew has been controlled by the church since about the 6th century. And I've said this other places before, but it's really interesting that the current Archbishop of York in England signs his name on official documents, Eber. And Eber means man of yew. So here's this high official of the church in England signing his name as man of yew on official documents. And the word York itself means yew. It means yew town, actually. That's what the Romans called Eboracum, York. That actually means yew. So the yew is everywhere in the land, in the naming of the land. It's everywhere that you look in the domination of the church. So the church sought to take over the places of sacred places of yew in the UK, and to quickly dominate them and to quickly suppress them, because they were afraid of it. They knew its power. And, you know, we know that this this story of Enoch, really, and I don't want to get too complicated and long-winded because I want to get back to the you here, but very similarly from this whole idea of Eden being Enoch being taken to Eden, Seth, the story of Seth, when he's trying to heal his sick father, Adam, he asks if he can get access to the to Eden to be able to get the oil of mercy or the seeds from the tree of life to be able to bring Adam, his father, back to life. Eventually, he gets access to the to the garden, and he plants these seeds into the mouth of his dying father, and out of the mouth of his father grow three trees. And these trees, a long story about these trees that we won't go into, but these trees were, we think, you, and they ended up being used to build the pillars in Solomon's temple. And we know that temples around that time, for example, Nineveh has been actually scientifically proven, the pillars used in the temple at Nineveh, which is a temple that we can think of as similar in some ways to Solomon's temple. The pillars were all made of yew in that temple. Yes. So really, ultimately, the yew goes back a long way. And the church sought to really to succumb it. So the powers of the yew are feared, forbidden, and hidden. And it's actually the Gnostic books that preserve the truth about the origin of the yew as Elohim beings, really true manifestation of God on earth. And it says, I'm going to start quoting a little bit here, these beings were given the power of light and were known as watchers at the gate of the treasuries of the light. This is the Gnostic saying. These beings, these you beings, were given the power of light and they were known as the watchers at the gate of the treasuries of the light. And it was said that myriads upon myriads will come into existence from them. Some of them were given specific names. One was called the Great You, the Great Guide of the Midst in the Middle Light World. One was simply called You, who maintained the cosmic covenant. And then we have the Overseer of the Light, this divine Elohim being who arose from the pure light of the first tree. So the Overseer of the Light is a being who arose from the pure light of the first tree. This is what it says in these Gnostic writings. So the U is then related to divine light, a formative light of higher divine beings that have been referred to as great angel, or even as the first man. So we see that the Gnostic you is one with a divine shining Elohim being, who's really incarnating the measure of God directly into the earth. So we're talking here about the God measure. A you, to encounter the you is to encounter the measure of God on the earth, an incarnated eternity on the earth. Now, these are dramatic claims to make, but after spending 9 years under one of these beings, I feel that it has to be said. And for a moment, we can just take an aside and stand aside and think about light. So the presence of light in this is really, really important. Only light can make life. I mean, life is light transformed. Everything that lives comes from light. And if you think about this, this is why living substance is combustible by fire. Everything that's living can be burned. It can be burned back to return to the divine fire. So it turns back to the great light. Everything that is alive can be burned. Think of all the customs of rituals of cremation, for example.
Right.
Only the ash is left over. But everything else returns to the light. So the Elohim, what's really interesting about this is the Elohim, and I'm trying to bring this around to to bring a picture forward here. I really want to try and bring a picture. So it might seem that I'm going in other directions, but I'm building a picture. As in the Christian hierarchies that we see put forth by John Scotus Erigenia and people like that in the Middle Ages, the Elohim were known as the spirits of form or as the spirits of light. It was known that light is formative, that these Elohim had the power of light itself, and light is form. So we see that these beings, these Elohim divine beings, had a power of light. And what's really amazing to me was, and I didn't know this obviously at the time, I was very sick and very naive and very young at the time, and thrown into this this being, and this is the early 90s we're going back here, the very early part of being under the tree was, and I've written about this in many places now, was the experience of the light tendrils or the light fibers. And in this kind of misty place of the you at that time, I didn't understand that I was dealing with the you's thinking through this kind of alkaloid mist. How would I have known that at the time? But I understood I was in another world. I knew that. I understood it on some deep, deep level in my sickness and in my broken body understood this. And as I was there, this very frail being that I was at that time, very sickly and close to death, I started seeing these light tendrils appearing from the periphery. Bear in mind that the UI was under was this great enclosed canopy. One way in through this great placental tunnel of living branch contortion, 40 feet long, into this great chamber, like an inverted cauldron, one way in and one way out. So you're in this darkened chamber, completely sealed from the outside world, where the laws are different. Things happen there that don't happen on the outside. And I would spend hours. It was lost time. You know, there are literally stories of lost time. I would be under there for an entire day, a night, hours. And I would have no idea that so much time had passed. And the light tendrils would come to me from the periphery and take on shapes. They seem to have intelligence, and they would move into my body at specific nodal points. Actually, later I realized had quite significant points, actually, in traditions of healing. I didn't know any of these things at the time. And these light tendrils would find these nodal points and enter into my body and seem to kind of go to a place of disease and surround and encapsulate whatever disease was there, and seem to then bring it back out, sort of change it, and bring it out of my body and sort of go to the periphery. So I felt as though I was being turned inside out under the U, that I was being, the light was entering into me and then making some kind of shift, changing things, and extracting and moving out into the periphery. So what might have been a liver or a kidney or something like that loses its identity on the outside, obviously, as a liver or a kidney, and becomes something else. And I felt that I wasn't being healed on the inside, I was being healed on the outside. And I began to become conscious of this other body that wasn't my physical body. And yet somehow my consciousness was able to be stretched into this place of being conscious almost in two bodies at once, being conscious under in this peripheral awareness under the tree that was sort of working with these light fibers and had this different form about it. So I feel I had a direct experience of this formative light, but it's taken me 20 odd years to begin to develop a language that this light was formative, that this light was actually intelligent, that this light had healing capacity, that this light could transform a human being, that this light could take diseased tissue and transform it, transmutate it to the point where it lost its identity as tissue and became something on the outside. And another body begins to get woven. It sounds extremely strange, but these were the parameters of my healing. This was the shape of the healing that took place under the U for me. And I realized much, much later, and I'll come back to this, was that the shape of the healing within this chamber of the you, this peripheral outside presence of this healing, was actually following the shape of how we come to being as an embryo. Each one of us starts as a peripheral being before we even have a body. We're actually a sentient series of great sheaths, great envelopes, great spheres of tissue, of membrane that have intelligence, that have presence, that are shaping, that are not genetic. There's no nervous system, but yet there's sentience. And it's that kind of sentience that makes a human being. That same sentience also heals a human being. And the you seem to have an expanded power of this sentience, as though this you was its own embryo, constantly shaping itself in an embryonic state, so it never really lost contact with its formative forces. And that's why a you doesn't age, because it's constantly in this relationship with forces that don't get used up.
Wow.
It's touching forces that come from elsewhere, and it's able to birth and incarnate those forces perpetually. So when a you is left alone, when the church doesn't cut it, when it's allowed to, as I say in the You Mystery teachings, is when a you is allowed to fulfill its gesture, to fulfill itself, when it's allowed to fulfill itself, it can do this. It then takes its place as an Elohim being on the earth. It can constantly incarnate these divine forces, forces of life that you and I can't even really dream about in our physical bodies. So I realized over a period of time that this was the embryonic tree of life. And this tree could do things that other trees and other beings just couldn't do. And there was a quality of twilight under this tree. Twilight's such a beautiful word, I think. It's a twilight. I mean, the time of twilight in the day is so magical. And the you light is like a sort of perpetual twilight. It's like a light shining through the darkness that to me has always the most profound light, the light that kind of illuminates the dark. And this is a twilight realm that I spent all this time beneath. And this takes me, hopefully if we have the time, this takes me to perhaps the next part here, which is the other part I wanted to cover in this talk, was really what the other world aspect of the you, because that twilight is the light of the other world. And what in the Welsh traditions they call Anun, the Welsh other world, as a living wholeness of origin. And the you is really the highest incarnated custodian of the forces of the other world on earth. And do I have time to kind of talk a little bit more about?
Oh, please do. We can just go over a little bit, because I'd really love to hear.
Okay, because it will help to tie things, I think, a little bit in here. But so when we last spoke, and I spoke about these bird beings who came to as a great teachers under the U, and I said that those beings looked very similar to the Anunnaki or the Anunnagi that were known as the sons of Anu. And Anu is a Babylonian word for high. So it's a god, this high god. And it's interchangeable with the Sumerian word El. And we'll see in a moment. That's where Elohim comes from. So the Sumerians actually claimed that the Institute of Kingship itself was descended from Anu, from this realm of Anu, this high god realm. So these sons of Anu, as I said in the last talk, These are the same beings, these Anunnaki and Anunnaki. It's the same as the Tuatha De Danann, these Irish the beings in Ireland, the Shi that we are across all of the British Isles and elsewhere too. And their goddess is named Danu, very similar to Anu. And Danu was, amongst other things, not only the goddess of the underworld, but she's a goddess of the Yu, and she has a Yu family. So she's the goddess of the Tuatha De Danann. Her name is Danu. She's a goddess of the other world, and she's also a Yu deity. Her father, sons, and brother all have Yu names. Her father's a Dagda, sometimes known as the good god, but he's also known under the epithet Okith Olether, which is Yu All Father, or Yu Eternal Father. Her two sons were named Ekabal, that means fork in the Yu tree, or Yuni is the other son, means Yu foliage. And her brother was named as Feri, man of Yu or son of Yu. Now, I said on the last talk, and I should repeat it here because it's a powerful thing, Feri or Feri, that word is so powerful for us because it's the word fairy. And do we really know where that word, the origin of that word, comes from? Would it not be possible that that word comes from a being known as the son of you or the man of you, a being of the Tuatha De Danann, a she being, a being still a mound to that being, still dedicated to that being in Knockan in Ireland? Why would that not be the case? Why would Fairy not come from the you, from these you beings? I feel that it very much does, and I feel that we have a whole exploration there. And it makes complete sense when you enter into the presence of a you that you are entering into this ancestral realm of the other world, our true ancestral realm. But as I tend to do, I'll speak in circles here trying to paint a picture, but let's go back to the word L for a moment, and you can please stop me at any time because I've got enough.
Oh no, I'm really enjoying it. I'm sure the listeners are too. Please go on.
Well, I hope so, and I mean, I can you know, talk about this stuff for, you know, in many different directions. But El is a word that's interchangeable with Anu, which we've just talked about as Danu, Anu, Hai, this great god. So El is an interchangeable word, as we said. It was equated in the ancient world with Saturn as the first primal sun. All the ancient teachings talk about Saturn as the first sun, not the sun in the sky today. This is where we've gone really wrong with our understanding of ancient traditions. Very, very wrong. And there's a lot of assumptions that we need to correct that are not being corrected because it seems so ridiculous that there could be another system. How? What do you mean that the solar system hasn't always been as it is? Well, it hasn't. And you showed me that. And this is now, through years of research, I'm realizing that even NASA says that. So this El, this primal sun, is the father god. And El is a word that's usually translated as God, glibly as God, but it actually means shining ones, as well as Saturn. So El, from El we get Elohim, shining ones. So this El, which is the same as Anu, which is the word for Saturn, is also shining one, is also Elohim. So it's a big story here that we have in the language. We start to see the truth. And one of the Elohim, one of these overseers of the light, was Yahweh. And Yahweh was also known as Jehovah, as you know. And during the 19th century, British historians indicated the Yew as the tree of God with a name equivalent to Jehovah. And G.J. Cumming, I'll quote him, he says, and this is from the 19th century, "Yew is ancient British and signifies existent and enduring, having the same root as Jehovah. And Yew in Welsh means it is, being one of the forms of the verb bod to be." So that's very interesting, this whole notion of you as ancient British having the same root as Jehovah and meaning enduring. It is. So the name Yahweh is said to have actually originated from the U in some cases through the Hebrew Yod, the first letter of the name for Jehovah. And that's in turn been seen, this is much more talked about in the past, and it's just been seen as not really credible now, but this was really documented before. This Hebrew Yod, the first letter of the name for Jehovah, which is controversially said to have come from the Irish word Yod, for you. So the Hebrew Yod, first letter of the name Jehovah, is said to have come from the Irish word Yod, for you. Isn't that fascinating? And there's been many connections between the Hebrew and the Irish. In fact, I heard one story where they were trying to. I don't know. I can't remember where the story came from. I wish I had the reference, but I don't. But where they were trying to have the native Irish speakers introduce the Bible to them, and the Irish speakers couldn't make head nor tail of this Bible. You know, like just didn't have anything want anything to do with it. But when they brought it in Hebrew, they had a better time understanding the Hebrew than they did the English, the native Irish speakers. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah, that's not a connection that I've ever heard of.
And there's a lot written about this in the 19th century and going back. Some of these writers, there's books dedicated to this that are now sort of rubbished by academia. Mm-hmm. And it's a real shame because a lot of this older research has now been discredited and sort of swept aside. But it's amusing, isn't it, that this word Yod for you, this Irish word Yod for you, is actually where the word for this little figure in Star Wars, Yoda, comes from. So we've got this little man with his staff who's got access to these magical forces whose name comes from the U. Isn't that great? I love that. You know, it's really great. So the word El is the... Really, you can think of it as a singular form of the Elohim, and these are the shining ones. And we know it's a name for Saturn. The same pattern can be found with Enkei-Ea as names for Saturn. And actually, in the ancient world, Saturn was recorded, as I said, as a primordial sun and as a great father god, or as a firm heart in the sky, a stationary god said to have organized the entire heavens. And to the Egyptians, it was Atum-Ra. Osiris or Horus, depending on the region that one is talking about. There are a bunch of other names for Saturn in the ancient world, including Yellow Emperor in China, Yama in India, Quetzalcoatl in South America. And we can think of today as Saturn as Old Father Time, based on the Kronos of the Greeks. So it's this idea of Saturn as a different kind of measure, this measure of time, this great god who measures. But really what's interesting is paradoxically Saturn was also said to reside on the earth as a great king. And that seems really kind of paradoxical. How can this great high god also reside on the earth? And we can go back to these books of Yu for some understanding of this, because Yahweh Elohim is regarded as a great angel in these books who comes forth through the veil, clothed in the material world. And as I've said, these Gnostic texts, they actually directly name this great angel as you, and as I said, as the overseer of the light, who comes forth from the pure light of the first tree. And this divinely incarnate Elohim being, who's equally a cosmic being and equally this earth being, was also known to the Gnostics as the first man. So we see that this Gnostic you being is one as a divine shining one, Yahweh Elohim, who incarnates the God measure into the earth, directly incarnating this measure of God into the earth as a divine being. But we have to ask ourselves, you know, why would a God seek to enter the earth like that in the first place? I mean, what would be the conditions for that? And I'll just say here that these bird beings, through the time that I spent under you, what they showed me was that the other world of Anun, this other world that we talk about a lot, Anun as the Welsh otherworld, was originally a living wholeness, a world of living wholeness that surrounded, permeated and nurtured the early embryonic earth, like a great big placental membrane, very much like the picture I've just described earlier on of the inner being of the you. So one world, the other one time, the other world was like this great membrane, this great placental sheath that bathed and nurtured the earth before the earth was fully physical. Now, the ancient traditions talk about this. This is not me just making this up. So there's a great expansive veil that a scientist today, particularly a plasma scientist, might refer to as a plasma membrane. So science, as always, starts to catch up with the old traditions, doesn't it? You know, we see this time and time again. So this great placental membrane was the membrane of Saturn. It wasn't connected to the sun. And there are a lot of studies now, particularly in the electric universe theory and through the work of Duardo Cardona, people who talk about the first primordial sun of the earth, as documented by the ancients, was not the sun as we see in the sky today, but was Saturn. And all vegetation on that world of Saturn was red. Now, the yew tree is called the red tree or the red wood. And when it's saturated with water, it looks absolutely red. All vegetation on that world was red. And, you know, actually, plant growth grows better in that red spectrum light than it does in the harsh ultraviolet light of the sun. So this Saturnian world, this nurturing placental sheath world, was actually conducive to a great, immense abundance of plant growth. So these ancient trees that we find on the earth, especially the ones that are not conditioned by the seasons, like the yew, you can look at a yew, it stands independently of the seasons. It doesn't change much. So when you look at trees that are resistant to the seasons, like evergreens, you have to sort of look at them as being ancient beings. We think of these conifers coming from the Carboniferous, the late Carboniferous period, 360 million years. So what's really been said, and what I was shown, but I have to say I was shown this, but I didn't understand it at the time. It's taken me 20 years to figure this out. But this world, this Saturnian world, where this early abundant growth, including these early primal yews, lived, these great beings who could regenerate indefinitely, this world was gradually approached by the sun we see in the sky today. It approached over eons and eons in a spiraling approach that would come towards this Earth, Saturn sheath, and then it would move away again, then it would come back, move away again over thousands and thousands of years, eons. But so we withdraw and approach and withdraw and approach. And gradually, it came so close as to basically breach this membrane, essentially, and to capture what the scientists say, the solar system captured Saturn, captured the sun, actually other planets, Mars was part of that system too, but that's for another time. And all of this was pulled in to the world of the sun. Another world, it's pulled and drawn into another world. So this placental membrane of Anun, this otherworldly membrane, was forced to withdraw. It had to involute. So what was on the outside in one world becomes, let me put it this way, what was once primarily an etherically constituted outside dimension in this placental sheath around Saturn, nurturing the Earth before it was really fully physicalized and hardened the way it became under the sun. So this primarily etherically constituted outside dimension under Saturn becomes an etherically constituted inside dimension beneath what we understand now as a solar system.
Wow.
And this was a startling revelation to me, because it meant that what we refer to as the other world of Anun, the other world of our ancestral world, is actually the living etheric counterpart of this former great placental membrane of Saturn that bathed the Earth. So this is a dynamic inversion described, and we see this in the mythological cycles of Ireland, in the stories of the Tuatha Dé Danann, which I've just talked about, all having new names, in their retreat to the Hollow Hills after their supposed defeat by the Sons of Mill. We've heard about these. The Tuatha had to retreat into the earth. The Tua, sometimes people say Tuatha, but the actual pronunciation is Tua, into the hills. They retreated after battle with the sons of Mild, the Milesians, who were these invaders of Ireland. But actually, this is not correct, because the early Christian church, seeking to obscure the true nature of the not only the ewe, but of the tua, cleverly managed to mix the mythological cycles with the historical cycles. And they gave the tua spurious genealogies and physical attributes that they never, ever had. So they connected them together with physical beings, with perhaps, maybe, real invaders. That's a whole question unto itself that I won't even go into. But the Tua de Danann were and are shining beings. They never were physical. They were the early ancestors. They were our ancestors in that other world. These are the she beings, the original beings. They are our true and original ancestors who once inhabited an early version of the earth while it was permeated by this etheric envelope. That was a Saturnian world. This was our original sun. This was the world that we began in, before you or I ever became physical in any way. So this inverted realm is the other world of Anu. It's the realm of the shining ones, the realm of the ancestors. So it would make sense that these gods of Anu, the gods of the other world, and El, bearing in mind, El Elohim, are connected to Saturn, not to the sun. And all the traditions later on have talked about Elohim as the sun being. And that's correct, but they've got the wrong sun. Not the sun in the sky today. It's this older sun. So it would make sense that as this world changed, that these great beings would come to the earth. They would descend to earth as this great sheath had to involute. It actually, what was an outside had to become an inside. Literally, the gods literally came to earth. So this, really what we're talking about here is the really these Elohim beings, these higher beings, as the bodies of gods within the earth. And the ewes, as these beings who are able to stand between, who have access to these great forces of the other world, and as a kind of surface being, as a being who stands between the worlds, who stands between the sexes, who is an incarnated eternity on the earth. No other being has been able to do that. One can talk about beings, partnerships and co-creative relationships of beings through the veil, and that's wonderful. But come into relationship with you're coming into relationship with an incarnated eternity, something that no other being has been able to achieve. Now, this is big, because it's not as though we have, here are beings that my guardian angels, here are beings that I'm connected with, here are the shining ones. This is a being who's incarnated forces that cannot be done in any other way, and it's been done through the form of a tree. So the you, these Elohims, took on this form to be able to incarnate these forces of eternity. And the original earliest name for the you through the Hittites was Ea, which really means eternity. And Ea means to be touched by eternity by extension. So coming into relationship with the you is to be touched by eternity. It's to be touched by the other world. It's to come into relationship with the ancestors. It's a place, it's a meeting place. It's a place where the forces of the other world are available in an incarnated way. It's not an energy. It's not something amorphous. It's incarnated. So when you and I go to a you and we go in there, we can't just walk up to it with our nervous systems and expect that it's going to communicate to us with our limited skill in our intuitive sense of, I'm a switched on person, I'm going to hug this tree, I'm going to communicate with it. That's nice, that's lovely, but we need to birth organs that are appropriate to that incarnated eternity. And that means that you and I are forced to be able to develop new organs that are appropriate to its world, are appropriate to this world of the ancestors. And when we birth these organs in ourselves, we can learn to touch in a different way, and we can learn to be touched in a different way. So when we talk about a co-creative relationship with the ancestors, with the shining ones, We need to be talking about these sheaths and these skins so that we're actually developing sensory surfaces that can meet and greet and touch and have ideas placed into them from the shining beings, from our ancestors, and that we can place ideas into those that are not generated from our will, from our personality, from our drive, from our need for results, from our idea of being healers, from our ideas of ego, from our ideas of our over-specialized ego, from things that we want. It has to go beyond all of that. We have to find these kinds of these organs that can breathe through us and with us. And only then, when we gain that kind of transparency, can we be ready to have a true relationship with the shining beings. And the you stands between to facilitate that relationship. It is an incarnated eternity on the earth.
And that's where your guided journey comes in, right?
Yes. So we'll just go through this fairly, not quickly, but fairly rapidly, because I'm aware that we've kind of gone over a bit here. So thank you to all listeners for your patience.
I'm sure they've been enjoying it like I have.
So in the You Mysteries work that we've been doing, just to say here, just as a quick thing, this is really a work that's developing as a community. So what I'd like to do is to do a very brief little piece, that something similar that we did before, but take it a little further, where this is entry level stuff with the You Mysteries, that obviously I can't share the inner mysteries work that we do in the You Mysteries work. But what I can share is some of the work we do in the early stages. So what we do is we work a little bit, we start to build these sheaths that I've been talking about. And then we sing into the sheaths, and that's what we're going to do a little bit today. I thought we could sing into the sheaths. So what I'm going to do is to briefly take us through this opening up into the sheaths, and a slight pause, and then a very brief incantation where we're going to sing some you words together. So I'm asking the listener to it's like a call and response, and it's a waltz really. It's really a waltz. Mm-hmm. I have these great big U rattles that I have that are from the Ormiston U in near Edinburgh, which are thousands and thousands of years old pieces of U that I have carefully asked to have from this U years ago, and were turned into rattles for me. So I'll be rattling gently in a three count. And what I will do is I'll say a name, a sacred name of the U, and it'll be a three count. And then the listeners can repeat with me. I'll say every name twice. So I'll say a name, and then after the count of three, I'll say the name again, and they can repeat with me, and singing into your sheaths as you do so. So first we'll find the sheaths, then it'll be a pause, and then I'll begin to sing this incantation, and we'll sing these words directly into our sheaths as a form of communication with these you beings. How does that sound?
That sounds wonderful.
So let's just sit comfortably. And I'd like us to just to begin to make sure that we're, after all of that, all of those words, let's just see if we can let our mind become slightly more free, slightly more breathable, so our mind's not grasping for information, or grasping for breath. So we just let the mind become a little bit more free, making sure your head is balanced on your neck, you're not straining, making sure you're comfortable in your chair or lying down. And beginning to notice the surface of your skin. Not as a concept, but as a perception. So you're sensing the surface of the skin, perhaps your face. See if you can really feel into this surface. You're not going inside of your body, you're staying on this balanced tensional surface right on your skin. Just allowing your face to become light-filled. So there's a sense of your face, the whole of the surface of your face feeling as one. Feeling nourished by this twilight. Feeling held. And beginning to find the front surface of your body through your throat, down towards your belly area. Gaining a sense of the front surface of your body. Staying at the surface. You may find yourself just slightly in a space, just it might seem just above the skin. It's important to stay in relationship to the sense of surface, so we're not beginning to expand off someplace. We want to have an incarnate experience here of this and let that build rather than jumping out into space. We want to really let this be an incarnate experience and let that guide us. So we begin to find the sides, the body, and also now the back. Feeling more and more three-dimensional, more and more whole, more and more surface. Just simply allowing yourself to be breathed in this space. Doesn't have to be perfect. It's going to have a shape that's appropriate to the moment. It's a living wholeness. It's not something we can control. So we really just take the grace of what's given in the space of wholeness, sense of surface. By finding your blood just under your skin. It's like a mantle of blood. I call it the blood mantle. Just under your skin. Your physical skin. Sense of a warmth. Just seeing how that blood begins to merge, begins to pass beyond this boundary, as though it's coming back into relationship with an original wholeness, an original skin. So you see the blood returning to its origin almost. You see ourselves coming more into this etheric blood space. We feel this sense of skin expanding. It's taking on a shape that's not following the parameters of the body. It's a new shape. We stay with the intelligence of the shaping process. We stay with its morphology. It's the teacher. We're the student. This is a very ancient, intelligent organism. It's not about the nervous system. It's not about any of that kind of information. Just allow yourself to breathe a little bit more on the edges. Allowing it to still feel like an incarnate experience. Not as a pushing out into something experience. So you want to build a surface. So literally coming into relationship with an organ that can sense, that can touch, that can taste, that can smell. All of those as one singularity, as one sense. And so, we're now going to just begin to bring our attention to the making of sound. We're going to take these sacred names of the you from all across the world, and we're going to sing as an incantation, as a homage, or I think an homage, I don't know how you say it here in this country, but into the sheaths. It's a call to the you, call to this divine being that's incarnated itself into the body of the earth. So I'm going to begin here. And I'll sing the name once, and then when I sing it again, after a count of three, you will sing it with me. And you'll pick up as we go along. We're going to repeat this twice. Aya, Aya, Able, Able, Ibe, Ibe, Ear, Ear, Iba, Iba, Iva, Iva, Ive, Ive, Yau, Yau, Yua, 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 Erwin, Erwin, Chis, Chis, If, If, and Teocha, and Teocha, Even, Even, Tis, Tis, Eya, Eya, Eibor, Eibor, Iber, Iber, Ear, Ear, Iba, Iba, Iva, Iva, Ive, Ive, Yau, Yau, you are, Erwin, Erwin, Chis, Chis, If, If, and Teocha, and Teocha, Even, Even, Tis, Tis, Air, Air, Awas, Awas, Yawin, Yawin, you, you, Aya, Aya. So just allowing those sacred you words to sound, to keep sounding through your sheaths, through this skin, through this organ, feeling that and then perhaps the you will place the seed of an idea for you back into the sheaths of your organ. Perhaps that will happen. at a time even distant from now. So we don't expect necessarily instant from the you. This is a being that takes its time. So I'm going to leave you there. In this place of breathing with your sheaths, allowing these you names to move through you for the you to hear, to respond. Thank you.
Wow. That was really powerful. Oh, while everyone is coming back from that, tell us, if you would, about your work. You've got so much that you're doing.
Yes. There's a lot going on this year, actually. We have a lot of offerings on workshops and events. People can go to the website, youmysteries.com, youmysteries.com. But the next thing coming up is in the UK, a tremendous event called Shamanic Lands. That will be May 19th and the 20th, right in the center, right in the heart of Sacred Wales. And my great friend Orion Foxwood, who's going to be also on your
right
speaking, is also going to be at that event. So Orion's a dear friend of mine. So that event will be coming up, and that event is all about the other world, and it's in the heart of Wales. So many people who have direct experience and teachers of the other world and Anun, the Welsh for the other world in Wales, will be there, head of a Druid order and various other people and myself. So that could be a really interesting event.
Oh, that sounds amazing. I wish I could be there.
Yes, yes. So that's May the 19th and the 20th. May the 26th and the 27th is the You Mysteries Level 4. Again in mid-Wales, but that's only open to people who've completed the You Mysteries Levels 1 to 3. So just to say that. So we're having You Mysteries Level 4 in mid-Wales on May the 26th and 27th. Then there'll be the Fairy Congress, which you'll be at.
That's right. That's right. I can't wait.
It'll be great. And that's June the 21st to the 24th in Washington State, in the USA, of course. And I'll be there talking more about the you and the under and the other world, especially about Anun. And I'll also be holding a pilgrimage up the Sacred Mountain there, which we've done before, to go and talk to the shining beings there and to work with our sheaths and to have to be touched and to touch the shining ones at the top of the Sacred Mountain, which is a really wonderful thing to do. So that's the Congress. There will be You Mysteries Levels 1 to 3 for people who are interested in coming into this work, which is growing quite rapidly just now, in Seattle later on in June. So right after the Congress, June the 30th to July the 3rd, right in Seattle, people can sign up for You Mysteries Levels 1 to 3. And they can sign up directly from my website, youmysteries.com. And we're very excited about this. We're already getting quite a lot of sign-ups, so if people are interested, they should really think about acting fairly soon. So it's probably going to fill up. So You Mysteries Levels 1 to 3. And what we're doing, just to say briefly, is that we're only offering Levels 1 to 3 in the USA. So Levels 4 and 5 will have to be taken in Wales or Scotland, so that the people coming to the You Mysteries in the USA will need to come to Britain to really go and go towards our first level of initiation, Level 5. And they will need to come and meet these great elders. So it's a great opportunity, I think, for those who maybe wanted to explore the UK, is to come to places that they would never normally go to, because we take people to these ancient yew groves that are off the beaten track. Nobody knows about circles of 12 yews, and this 7th century church is standing in the middle that you can only get to by walking next to great Iron Age forts. These are sacred, sacred places that you would not find. So we'll be doing this work, level 4 and 5, which I'll talk about in a second. So the You Mysteries Levels 1 to 3 are available in Seattle, June the 30th to July the 3rd. And then we're running them again, but in Scotland, New Mysteries Levels 1 to 3, August the 3rd to the 6th, right outside of Edinburgh. And we'll be working with the U that where these raffles came from, which
is gigantic
U that is, again, you have to walk in through an enormous tunnel, and we work with that. We might also, perhaps if we're lucky, we might go and work with the U's at Roslyn Chapel, so which we did last year, which was a great treat. So that's U Mysteries Levels 1 to 3 in August in the 6th, the 3rd to the 6th, sorry, and that's near Edinburgh. There'll be another U Mysteries Level 4 for those who've completed 1 to 3 by that time, October the 6th and the 7th. That will also take place near Edinburgh in Scotland. And there'll be another U Mysteries Level 1 to 2 in England, 13th to the 14th of October in Shropshire, which is just across the Welsh border, at an incredible stand of U's, incredible grouping of ancient U's. And that's just a level 1 to 2. And then we're having our level 5 initiation, October 27th to 28th, and that will be right in the heart of Wales. So there will be an initiation this year for our U Mysteries Mystery School in October, running October 27th to 28th. But you must have done levels 1 to through 4 to be able to be eligible for that. So we'll be taking a group of people through initiation, and that will be the first. These will be the first people in modern times to have gone through a U initiation.
What an exciting year for you and all the different places that you're going to be doing this. Seems very profound to me that a very important part of it is the different places you'll be.
You're absolutely right, Kim, and I think it's really important that the U's are calling, and if somebody had said to me 10 years ago that this is what I would be doing, I would have laughed. I would have said, that is just unthinkable. But I just kept on doing the work and doing the work that the U would ask me to do. And now we're coming to the point where the U's are really pulling people forward. I'm hearing from people all the time who are having experiences with the U's now from across the world where the U is. So it's become becoming a bigger work. It's still small, and it's still a great time to get involved, actually, because there's an intimacy about it, actually. Mm-hmm. There's a beautiful intimacy about it, and I don't want to lose that. I'm not interested in a big institution and lots of people. I'm interested in quality and in birthing a community that is really going to do the work. I don't care how many people come. For me, it's about quality, and I'm really, this is the work that the U has brought me to do. So if it's 3 people in the end, then that's fine with me. If it's 300, well, great. But if we're doing the work, that's the main thing.
Well, I want to thank you for bringing the work to our listeners. I know a lot of the people from the Fairy Summit were asking to hear from you again, and I know a lot of the people who weren't at that summit are really happy that they got to hear from you today. This has been so nice, Michael.
Thanks, Kim, and I look forward to meeting you at the Congress.
I know. Yeah. It's going to be so great. Is there anything you'd like to add before we close today?
I think I'm just going to leave it there, because I think the U has spoken enough. And if I was to add something, it would just be something that I was trying to add myself. So I'm going to leave it.
Oh, well, thank you again. Thank you. And thank you to the U. Oh, and thank you to you, Michael, for bringing this forth and connecting us in this way. I appreciate it so much.
Thank you, Kim, for inviting me. And I look forward to our time together in the Congress, and hopefully doing this kind of thing again in the future.
That's right. It sounds wonderful. Oh, so I want to thank the trees and all the spiritual guardians and allies who are here with us in this sacred space. Thank you. I want to say another thank you to the U. And I want to thank everyone listening. I am so grateful to have you with us on this journey. Thank you for creating this space with us. Your presence is so important. May our relationships with the trees be ever growing and ever more beautiful. And may they bring about lasting positive change for our world. Until next time, this is Kim Wilborn wishing you love and abundance.
Thank you.